the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 272.
Free as in beer.
All right. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
And so I guess we start with what's going on, right? We do that every time, right?
We forgot sometimes.
Consult your notes.
Yeah. Right. So Mary, how's it going?
Pretty good. You guys probably didn't notice that I added a new wardrobe piece to my ensemble.
Katie and Neon.
Yeah, there was a, I don't remember the website specifically, but there was a kind of a fundraiser for KDE, and so you could order KDE Neon shirts, because, you know, that's their flagship distro, which I'm running right now, and probably will be running for a while.
All right.
But anyway, yeah, so I ordered that, so it's really cool. It's going to be part of my wardrobe for PenguinCon, so I'm excited. What else? I tried to install another operating system on my old Xerizen laptop, which I think it's starting to fail because I didn't really, I had some problems with freezing and not booting and just kind of being a mess. So I think that thing is, thing's about 6-7 years old.
Yeah. So. I remember you just got it when we started the podcast. 2011.
I think we had been going for a little bit, and then I got it.
No, I remember you showing up the very first time we sat down.
Did I?
Yeah, I remember us sitting in that little library thing. I don't know that at the school.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't in the main computer lab where we normally recorded. We were in the little library, and that was New Year's Eve. That was the first show you showed up at.
Oh, it was New Year's Day.
Or New Year's Day.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, that was. And I remember Matt and I both being impressed with your laptop. Wow, that's so cool.
It was at the time, and now it's going to be relegated to the trash heap. I mean, the recycle heap.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it's kind of, I think that's pretty much what's been going on.
All right. Phil.
This past weekend, one of Tom's guys helped install a networking cabinet in my basement, and that was awesome. Moved the home network into it. I've been wiring up all the patch cables. It cleaned up a nice corner of the basement.
All right.
I've got my access points all firmware updated. I've converted the name of the SSID over to the server farm, so it begins. My cats have decided that they like vegetables, and they ate all of the plants that we started from seeds. So I found that this morning, first by stepping into it, and then seeing that none of my plants are there anymore. So that was it's a good time.
Stepping into the plants, making them sick?
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to get some chicken wire.
I do. Absolutely.
That keeps cats out, rabbits, and chickens.
Yeah.
Are you getting chickens?
Eventually, yes.
If you need advice on chickens, Cass's son raises a lot of them, so he knows which ones are better. He's learned a lot in two or 3 years of chicken raising. They got a lot of chickens.
Chicken raising, they did that at Temple Bar a few years ago. They had chicken races on Sunday afternoon.
Oh, chicken races.
This is in Detroit. I mean, where else would you have chicken races?
Yeah.
In Detroit.
I said raising chickens, but raising chickens sounds more fun.
Oh, it was raising. Oh, I thought it was raising.
Yeah, he gets them when they're small.
Never mind.
Well, then he eats them, so.
That's
I really
funny.
Thought you said racing.
Yeah. Well, I'm fine with chicken races. I'm actually excited about that now.
It was fantastic. They had these chickens, and of course now the city is, because Detroit's comeback has really taken hold. The city's starting to clamp down on stuff, so it's
like
not as much
racing.
Fun. Yeah, so
they took away that guy's goats too. If you didn't hear that story,
oh, the guy with the goat who'd get on the bus.
Well, no. Someone had decided to wanted to mow Detroit with goats, so they brought all these goats to Detroit to get rid of all the grass. And the city said no. And they said, but no one's mowing the grass, so the
That's
goats.
An awesome plan.
It seemed like a great idea. But the city made the person get rid of. They had a lot of goats. They were just going to let them wander around the city.
that could be problematic.
It could be. All right.
There's a guy with a horse wandering around the city too. If you haven't spotted him, that's another thing. Anyways.
All right.
So how about you, Tom? How's life been going?
Life is going great. We got some really big projects approved, so we've been throwing up some videos on that. It's a build-out for a fun center. And a fun picture center. Like Dave and Buster's style
thing.
That
sounds like fun.
Yeah. So there's just absolutely tons and tons of cabling. And as always, as these projects go, I'm documenting them because people always wonder how that stuff happens. So we do the behind the scenes and we're like, we have meetings with general contractors and show you how the plan changed before the walls were up. And then the drywall people showed up a week early and put a wall. We don't know where they had. They apparently are working off a different blueprint than anyone else and built a wall somewhere.
But you have evidence of why the budget might get blown. Is that what you're?
Oh, yes. Then the owner himself said things like, let's put TVs on the different wall. We're fine with that, but there's no electricity. He's seen a box. And he just assumes any box that's on the wall is one you can use for electricity.
Sure.
And the electrician's like, it doesn't work that way. Those are separate ones. You can't just, code. Things like that. Mm-hmm. That's been, the usual. But we've been documenting more and more of it to show people the behind the scenes of how these things get built. Everyone just likes the organized nature of something that's created. Getting it there is such a mess.
Yeah.
Our love affair with Ring Central is over, which is our phone company for us. And I learned a lot about free PBX, and I got it set up. Learned also the horrifying nature of how phone trunking works. I learned all the lingo, and then I learned that all I do is type in whatever I want for my outbound caller ID, and I can be anyone I want. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much of an honor system that was.
Email.
Linked, yeah, it's linked to you, but finding out who owns a phone number, not arbitrarily easy at all. This is how those scammers have been doing it. It's like,
I never pick up the phone.
I had a typo, and I just assumed everything should match, and I realized I just typoed something, and it still worked. I'm like, hold on a minute here. And so I called myself testing, and I'm like, okay.
We can all be Spartacus.
We can all be the White House.
I was just going to say, yeah.
So I will not abuse this thing I've learned, I promise.
He says, wink, wink.
I also probably agreed to terms and conditions when I signed up to be, because we actually might get into reselling phone service. It's been a bigger thing we're looking into. So we just dealt with too many bad phone companies, and a lot of our clients like us a lot because we are easy to deal with. And we might just start being a phone company too. That way they can just pay one bill for everything technology related. That's kind of their goal. We already do their website. We do everything else. So, yeah. So
now you just need to be an ISP, too.
Now he's got to be an ISP. Well, we're working on that. Phil knows a guy. He needs help.
It's coming.
Hey, Phil knows a guy.
Phil knows a guy.
Said in my best Jersey accent.
Yeah. Right. We want to become a WISP. The final minor thing that we're doing is this big project of doing a migration for VM servers. And I'm going to do a lesson learned of everything you shouldn't do when you build a VM server. And obviously we always take over from IT companies that were failing. I'm sure there's good IT companies out there, but my perspective is there's a lot of bad ones. That's how we take over clients. And they just set the VMs up wrong, so we're having a fun time exporting them. And each export takes about 5 or 6 hours to find out whether or not it was successful.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah. The client says, are you billing me for all the time? I said, no, honestly, we don't do anything other than wait for this to complete. So it's not like management time is very minimal other than we log in once in a while and look. And he says, well, you have to be at a computer. I'm like, what do you think we do? Like, we got games running in one window, and we just watch the little progress bar once in a while in the other window. I said, we're always in front of a computer.
Yeah.
That's so, for sure.
Yeah, that's a summary of what I did other than a bunch of little reviews and stuff that I threw up on my YouTube channel. Oh, we crossed 21,000 subscribers, so that's exciting,
very
too.
Very nice.
Yeah,
very
congratulations.
Nice. Very nice.
Yep, including new NetGate hardware. So people like PFSense, I got some new reviews of the new hardware they got out. So Phil was playing with it when we got here. It was on the table still.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really nifty-looking box.
It's an excellent box. Mm-hmm. It's ARM. It's low wattage. It runs open source PFSense.
On the kilowatt.
And it has cool lights.
Yes.
Yeah, on the kilowatt. It was pulling 5.5 watts at just running.
And if you weren't sold on it already, Phil, the lights are programmable on it, so you can make them do different things.
Please take my money.
It even has an orange glowy light. Right now, default programming is blue is running, and orange glowy means it needs an update.
Oh, that kind of programming. I was looking for one that the LED went blue, 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 blue.
Oh, that would be cool, too. I'm sure you could do that. It's got a USB port, so you could expand. Actually, it has a bunch of interesting things. We took it apart. they put on, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a bus interface.
I can't believe
interface.
It. You took it apart.
I know. It's got a bus interface on there, so you can get add-ons. And they have a link right on their NetGate does, to all the different, the company that makes all the add-ons. Basically, they just create the interface. They said, we're going to leave it up to you what you want to do with it. But they have all kinds of different devices that will plug into it for hacking and fun stuff. I like that as a company, that their open source and their hardware is like, they don't care that I took it apart. Matter of fact, they retweeted my video of taking it apart. So that's how companies should be.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we have in our show notes a company who was not behaving with GPL and firewalls. And we'll get to that when we get to the news.
So how about you, Tony?
Last time we recorded, we talked about FreeNAS, and there was an update, and because Tom ran into a problem where it had like a memory leak problem or something. Well, there was something with memory, right?
My memory of which server I was on when I pressed update in the middle of the day is really where the big problem was.
Okay.
Well, yes, there was a bug in the Samba was broken in U3, and the U4 update solved the Samba problem.
Well, I was running U2, and that night, my whole server just was inaccessible. You know, it's like, what's going on? I went down to look at it, and everything looked fine, except for none of my VMs were running, and I couldn't get to anything. So I went to reboot it, on the commands, in the menu. And when it was trying to shut down, it was scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, saying cache is not accessible or cache something, like all these cache errors. And I'm like, oh, I hope that's not, like, broken. I rebooted, and it came back up, and that was on the U2 update.
Hmm.
And then I went to U4, and everything's, like, magically fixed.
Hooray.
So, yeah. Even my boot ray, or boot Zpool, it was a mirror, and it had been telling me that the one was bad, and then, the main was fine. And it rebooted and resilvered or something, and now it's magically good. So now it's like, was it having problems before reading it, or is it like giving me a false positive?
Rebuild.
Yeah.
Make sure you back. Do you use the drive encryption for the drives?
No.
Okay. As if you do, just make sure you back up the keys. I wish they would keep the keys with the export, but they're not. So I've done like two videos on this because people have lost their drive arrays by just backing up the config file but not backing up the keys that encrypt the drives.
Mm.
That's an important thing, and I don't think it's emphasized enough at the FreeNAS folks.
It's a completely separate click and download that you have to do.
In a different area.
Yep.
And it's per drive array. So if you have multiple volumes, it's per the different ones.
Mm.
So it's not intuitive is kind of what I'm inferring from that.
Right.
That's great. I mean, an important feature like that, and it's not intuitive, or maybe, at least it's not. Well, yeah,
feature request. Let's have one like main backup window or something.
That would be nice. And it tells you when you create the encrypted array.
Too practical, Tony.
But I think it should like flash red and really, really emphasize that you should. By the way, you're creating an encrypted key. You should back up the key, and this is where you back it up. It's easy to back up. It's just in each drive you click on, you can download the key. You can also rekey drives. They made the process really easy to do. Hmm. I'm also in a debate with someone I have to do testing on. Someone says every time you replace a drive, it builds a new key, and I'm unaware of that being true. So I got to find out.
All right. I'm unaware of it, too.
Yeah. Anyways. Well, back up.
Yeah. The other thing I did was I got a HD Home Run. That's Silicon Dust makes these little boxes, and you hook up a TV antenna to it, and then you can stream TV across your network. And it's
I don't think that's ever been done before. No.
But, I mean, it's your own antenna, like over the air. Or you can buy one that will hook up to your cable box.
So what you're saying is that you can once you've got this hooked up and you get the signals from the OTA or over the air station, then you can throughout your network in your house you can stream it to various devices.
Yeah, but you take it the next step is Plex has a DVR built in now. And you say, set up Plex. Mm-hmm. It says, hey, I found your HD home run. And I said, yes, next. It said, are these your channels? I said, yes, next. And it was working. And now I can, like, over the air, I can schedule recordings. I can pause and play, you know, through the Plex app. And
that's watch awesome. All this. I like that. That's really cool. Yeah,
so I'm excited. Except for the problem is where I have the antenna right now is in my basement. And I get one channel.
Well, so it wasn't. Are these your channels? It was. Is this your channel?
Right. So I have to drill a hole from my basement into my first floor, and then first floor to my attic, and put the antenna upstairs.
Does your wife know this?
I do. Yeah, she does.
Okay. Is she okay with it?
Yeah, she's like, as long as it's not in the way. So it's gonna be in my closet. Right by the, it's gonna be in the closet. Oh, you know, nobody goes in there anyways.
And I thought the problem was gonna be there's nothing to watch.
Well, what are you running Plex on?
Android box.
A what?
An Android box.
Oh, okay.
So I bought this, you know, it's HDMI only out, and it has an Ethernet plug-in and USB. And it plugs straight into the TV, and it turns your TV into a big Android tablet.
And, only with touchscreen.
Yeah, with no touchscreen. So I have a remote that has an Air Mouse, and so you do everything with, you know,
okay,
with the remote. And so we have any kind of Android app you want to run, like Netflix and Hulu and Plex and YouTube and
Sling.
Sling TV.
So Sling thinks
Pluto TV.
So Sling will think it's on an Android device and run? Because, you know, I think that they, at least I can no longer run it off my computer.
Really?
They deprecated it it was no longer runnable off my desktop. Now, this was in Windows, so you know, maybe that's the problem. But but the fact that you can run it off your computer because Sling thinks it's an Android device, I think is pretty cool.
Well, it's an actual Android box. It is an Android device.
It
doesn't have a built-in screen. Well,
it with like an Android distro. So it's an actual Android box.
Yeah, it's an Android box.
Okay, I gotcha. Yep.
And the kids, I mean, they play Android games, you know, what you would get on your tablet. They can play it on the TV and... it's a lot of fun. Yeah, so then there's the Plex app. So it's just like watching TV, except for you have to go into the Plex app and then say live TV, and then there it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your DVR.
And you're pulling all of your stored DVR information off of your FreeNAS box. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And it's actually my Plex is a plug-in running on FreeNAS.
Okay,
so,
cool.
Yeah, so I have like 6 terabytes of space for my for everything I have. And my wife's like, oh, so how many movies can we record? Because it's like we can only get
come
like
on,
three
this is the
on
important
there, right?
Stuff.
Hold my beer and watch this.
I know.
What's my hard drive budget, honey?
I said, I don't know, 600, 700 movies maybe? She's like, really? So, yeah. That's on top of the other 600 we already have in there. So,
see, that's how you're able to get stuff easily is you just kind of tie it into something that your wife really likes, and
that's
then
right.
You know,
spousal approval is very important.
Yeah, that's what I gathered. I mean, just in general. So,
oh yeah.
All right. Well, wow. Thanks for sharing that information about your setup at home. That sounds really pretty cool.
Yeah.
I just do Roku, and then I turned on my. I have had a little Chromebox. You know, the little. Chrome.
Chromecast.
No, it's not a Chromecast. It was running Chrome OS on a little box that plugged into my TV, and I hadn't turned it on in about a year and a half, and I don't even get a picture, so I'm going to have to unplug it and try to get it updated or something. If something's wrong with it, I hope it's not broken.
The HDMI cord is probably unplugged somewhere.
You know, it was for a while. I plugged that in. I thought maybe the cord was bad. So anyway, but you know, enough of that. Might be a, hey, what did I do in a future episode?
All right. Well, that's about all I was working on. I mean, there's a few other things, but I don't want to take too much time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should move on. We're going on to listener feedback.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
All right. So most of the emails we had recently was related to your guys' cubes review.
Yeah. The Mary and Phil show, or the Phil and Mary show. yeah, that was it was kind of a fun review because, you know, Phil could share the practical nature, you know, the production experience that he's got using it on his laptop. And, you know, so, yeah, it was fun. And it was nice. I think it was, wasn't it Brian, I think?
Yes.
Brian from Minneapolis?
Yes, that sounds correct. And also Cubes 4, a couple days after that show got released.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So just production version of Cubes 4 instead of a release candidate.
You know, and I was thinking as I was reading all of, and I know we're going to discuss this later, but as I was reading about all these various data breaches and all this stuff, and I'm thinking to myself, a lot of that could be mitigated by using the kind of structure that Cube sets up. I mean, because you could, if somebody is, if something happens, it's all kind of containerized and mitigated because it's in a, you know, it's in a VM and not allowed to run free throughout the rest of the system.
I think some of those design aspects can definitely be translated to, like, an application during the application development, compartmentalizing. Like the database communication layer versus the customer input layer and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could help. Also, not hashing or also correctly hashing and salting and storing information from customers would also be useful instead of just leaving it out there in plain text. We'll get to that.
Yeah. yeah, that's true.
We also had a message from Clark about our Cube's review. So thank you, Clark.
He says the same keyboard combo that you guys talked about works in like all sorts of other applications.
The control shift C hand contortion that you have to do to copy out of the Cube's buffer and into the other VMs.
The receiving. Buffer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. He says he runs Debian with VMs, and he says to copy in and out of his VMs on Debian, it works like that. Same thing with VNC, X2X, and Vagrant.
Yeah, that was good to know. I was unaware of that.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Clark.
And that's really all I saw.
Okay.
So, thank you, everybody. And I guess we'll move on.
Yes, we will.
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Hot distro releases.
Yes.
There's a...
Had a couple.
Yeah.
Yes, we have. well, we've actually had a couple of BSD releases, and I'm going to get to those first. TrueOS came out. You know, I think I mentioned earlier that I tried to get it, put it on my ancient laptop, which I couldn't get it installed. But again, that's just the laptop itself. But it was nice to see that TrueOS, both their server and desktop.
18.03?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, is out there. I was anxious to take a look at how far the Lumina desktop has progressed, because the Lumina desktop was... specifically designed for TrueOS. Prior to that, they had used KDE, but it presented some challenges as far as, you know, the BSD environment versus the Linux environment for which KDE was written. So, but they're using the same toolkit, so it does have that kind of KDE look to it, but it's definitely not KDE. So, I was hoping to take a look at that. I might just put it on a virtual machine on this laptop here.
And
take a look at it.
Cool.
And Redcore, I ended up installing Redcore. Remember, I reviewed that a couple months ago, I think it was, and I found it to be a nice nice distribution, and so I've got that installed on it now. So kind of testing it out as far as, hey, I'm going to leave it on here, because since that, there have been a couple of other Linux distros that have been on that laptop. So.
All right.
Yeah, so that kind of caught my eye.
The Fedora 28 beta came out. So that I'm excited about that. And speaking of
great.
And speaking of Fedora, we had just mentioned a couple minutes
ago. Tip my hat to that.
Cubes 4 just came out, and its VMs are based on Fedora 25, and they're easily upgradable to Fedora 26 and 27.
Nice.
Okay. And there must be a new song for OpenBSD. Maybe that'll be our closing song.
It sure will be.
Yep. So.
Yeah, because OpenBSD 6.3 is out.
6.3 just came out. That's yeah. Right.
And being April, there's an impending Ubuntu release.
Ubuntu, yep.
So that's Beta 2 is available right now. I remember I used to install Release Candidate, and then on the day of release, I just do an apt-get update, and then it'll update to the main. So instead of waiting, and this was the time when I, you know, everybody was downloading all at once, and mm-hmm. It would take forever, you know, or, you know, timeouts and stuff. So it would take literally 5 minutes to get the updates, reboot, and you were running the live update.
I always waited 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember those heady days of Ubuntu.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I run Mint, so it's every 2 years I get a main update. No, there's point version releases, and so I'm running 17.3 right now, which I love it, you know, and I'd rather have something stable right now, especially now that I don't have time to mess with my laptop. I just want something that works, mm-hmm. you know.
Sure.
All right.
I noticed that there was a pfSense update
yes.
the other day.
I was going to mention that, and I loaded it. It went really smooth.
Yeah, it's a minor release. It's a patch level release.
Yeah,
it's
patch level.
2.4.3 now.
Yep. And we got the Spectre meltdown mitigations in there. Not that they're really relevant on firewalls. I think people get overly excited about it, and I'm like, what else are you running on your firewall? Like, you shouldn't be running any other software. It's just a firewall. So, but they did patch it. I'm glad they mitigated it because, you know, just in case you decide to cohabitate some other software on your firewall, which is a horrible idea,
right.
But someone will do it. I've already updated most of our servers. Most of our clients, I think, are all up to date by now, and we haven't had any issues.
It was surprisingly faster than previous updates, too, for me.
Yeah, whatever it is, I think it is probably not a major code change. It wasn't a lot of code in it. So it downloaded fast and updated and back up and running.
All right. Cool. I guess we're going on to news.
Tech news and views.
All right. Tech news. So, Tom, I'll let you. Should we let Tom kick it off or?
No,
and then everybody can say, yeah, Tom took my, no. Tom had my.
Yeah.
We'll take
good
all
point.
Of Mary's stories.
Yeah.
I'm fine. Do you want me to go?
Yeah.
Or do you want to go?
Yeah. Look at him. He's sitting over there just anxious. No. Go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
I'll actually start with my favorite thing that happened a few days ago. The Free Software Foundation announced a crowdfunding campaign to buy Facebook. That way we can all play Libre Farmville. If you didn't know, this happened to be released on April 1st, but it was my favorite headline I seen on April 1st. It was well thought out, and even said we're going to use the large donation received from the Financial Fund and use it to help crowdfund the rest of it to buy Facebook. And they wrote it all up, and it's funny, and it made me laugh a lot. So of all the things I seen on April 1st, that was among my favorites. Symantec may have violated the GPL with their Norton Core router. Also, for lulz, look up what that looks like in an image search. It is a geodesic dome-looking router. I don't know which is more surprising, the fact that it's hideous or that someone actually bought a router from Norton. So I don't – it's – yeah, Phil's eyes say it all. It's a crazy-looking device.
You couldn't even put this in a rack if you wanted to. It's huge.
Well, they call it a core router, but it's – don't buy it. How's that? And it sounds like they basically said, hey, we can just use open source and load it on here, right? And Norton's track record for security, for allegedly being a security company, is less than stellar, especially on using open source projects. If you remember, we covered a couple months back the giant flaw Norton had left in people's they were less secure by running Norton on Exchange Server. Norton decided to use from 2011, and it was discovered in 2017, the 2011 version of PKZip's OpenStack that had flaws in it. So if you sent well-crafted zip files as attachments to Exchange servers, you could get pwned. If you uninstalled your Norton security software in your Exchange server, you would not get pwned. You are literally safer without Norton.
So wow.
It was introducing, and they found a series of other flaws in it. And it was because Norton, even though it's open source, they were not grabbing the new binaries when they compiled. They would just keep using the old systems and never update internally. Yeah.
I don't understand why patching is such a hard concept. Especially if you have, let's say, like, even the most basic test routine. Does it boot? Does it run?
Well, yeah. And when you're thinking about when you're compiling in things, like, you need to be able to have a security tool to scan zip files. Should you not also look at the tool that you use to unzip the file and see if it has a patch and just copy the latest version? By the way, it's open source. It doesn't require a new license. You simply have to do it. But they hadn't updated in, like, 6 years or something like that. Yeah. Yes. I don't know how this is going to play out in the Linux world for those running Chrome, but Chrome in their terms and agreements updated, and they now have a scanning tool that scans for malicious files. And some Windows users are freaking out because it's scanning all their files on their system. And I think that Google's probably not doing it maliciously. I think they're trying to help people who are unable to help themselves. Mm-hmm. And scanning things because nobody understands that they shouldn't download something that's bad. But of course, now you're just whether or not you understood that you agreed to it. So it's one more case, like so many companies, they base on everyone just says agree.
It should be a explicit opt-in. Yeah, saying this is going to now access everything on your computer instead of just what's in your internet cache. And
yes.
Why is it doing that though? Why isn't it just checking the downloads folder or the cache folder?
Yeah, that's really bad.
Well, they figured they want to get into that antivirus market. They heard it's lucrative. I don't know. I have no idea. I thought it was an odd change from Google to start doing that. The other side of it is now is if Chrome didn't suck up enough memory, it now they're like, hey, look, people have more memory free. Let's see what else we can stick in here. Yeah.
Yeah, that alone will make me go to something else. I'm thinking Firefox is sounding pretty good right now.
I will. I'm really impressed.
Firefox is my default browser.
Yep. Too bad there wasn't the system that I could put like Chrome in its own VM. And
You can use that other tool to do that.
Yeah, you can do that.
You know, and I don't have it in my show notes, but this is actually something really aggravating. Chrome now has decided occasionally not to trust some of the, you know, when you have a self-signed cert because you're running something internal, you got to do the, you know, click OK. Chrome moved, and you have to look in the release notes to find this. This is really, you know, if you wanted to get past it, you could type bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the words you got to type.
I noticed it wasn't working anymore.
It's not working anymore. It's not bad idea anymore, which I'm looking for it now because I can't remember. But it was really, we had to discover this. And it was really, our answer was actually we moved over to that. But yeah, it's this is unsafe. That's the new one. That's the change.
Oh, they had to make it that much longer?
This is unsafe. Well, why'd they change it at all? You know how few people knew about it? The people who knew about it are people like us who need to know about it. The general consumers are just fine to stop. So why would you change something on us?
This is unsafe. Yep, yeah, I found that too.
Yeah, that's just, yeah. So yes, join us over at Firefox. Our answer has been, we use Firefox a lot. We don't use Chrome. I use Chrome for a lot of the things that Chrome's good at, but my other general browsing is becoming more and more Firefox. And yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I mean, I still use Chrome, but my defaults at home for many things is Firefox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Announcing 1.1.1, the world's fastest privacy-first DNS service. I forgot a one.
Cloudflare.
But there's four ones in there, folks, for paying attention. Yeah.
There's Quad 8, there's Quad 9, and now we have Quad 1.
We got Quad 1. I'm still using Quad 9 because I like the filtering they do, so that's still my go-to for that. And for those of you wondering, just a couple quick little details on how it works. They use the Anycast protocol, so it becomes fast because it's a point of presence wherever you are. So if you put that in as your DNS, no matter what country you're in, it will try to find the closest physical server, but the IP is always the same, 1.1.1, and it seems really fast. The privacy first thing, I don't know. You're really, when it comes down to DNS privacy, you're just moving the trust. You're going, I don't trust my ISP. I trust Cloudflare. Well, and I always remind people that you're just, I mean, now, Cloudflare is a good company with a good reputation, but it's still, the point is you've just moved all your queries. Now,
I think the main thing where privacy first comes in is that they're not logging. Like, literally, they are actively avoiding logging any DNS.
I think they keep 1 hour or 24 hours. They said they have to keep some for and their analytics, and then they delete. Oh. They're doing it for – they have the details written. The death is in the details. The logging's in the details. The other side of any of that type of thing, though, is that's what they say right now. That could always change. And that's right. The problem with any of them. As we learned, is if they get subpoenaed for something, they will hold the logs longer, and they're not going to tell you that.
Yeah, and then it'll be buried in a terms of service that nobody
terms of
reads.
Service change, whatever happens. Yeah. The good news is, well, first bad news, then good news. First, they were supporting DNS over TLS, but then it didn't seem to work right with pfSense, and lots of other things got broke, but they seem to have fixed that again. Mm. I did a video on how to set that up so you can encapsulate your DNS, because one of the other things is, because DNS passes in UDP, your packets can be poked at, prodded, and sniffed. So moving them over
that's
to TLS.
That's what I was wondering, if it would work on my pfSense. That's awesome.
Yeah, yes, I have an instruction on how to set it up on pfSense with DNS over TLS, which also includes DNS sec verification as well.
Now, regarding the Quad 1, I saw the other day that you could issue a tweet at that resolver, and then they would respond to you on Twitter with whatever records that you had requested from
really?
Quad 1.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
It's pretty useless, but at the same time, it's kind of funny, and thanks, Internet.
That's pretty cool. I also have a link that says DNSSEC or not that's in the show notes. And if you guys haven't clicked it, it's amusing. It lets you know whether or not – it's a test to let you know whether or not you're running DNSSEC, because you guys are on my network. Unless you've done something to bypass my DNS servers, you are running DNSSEC.
Yeah. You have what's his name? Sasha Korn?
Yeah. Brennan? Yeah. Borat.
Yeah, Borat.
Borat gives you
very
thumbs up.
Nice. Test indicates you
if you're
protected.
Not running DNSSEC, I think you get Picard facepalming. and while it's doing the lookup, you get the Fry I don't know if meme. So DNSSEC is explained with memes, makes me really happy.
Regarding troubleshooting DNSSEC, there is the DNS Looking Glass, I believe it's called. It helps you find strange problems with DNSSEC implementations.
Hmm.
So maybe that's useful to somebody out there. If it is, let us know.
The Looking Glass? The DNS Looking Glass?
I believe that's what it's called. I haven't had to use it for a while, so my memory is kind of faulty. I don't have that ECC. But
there's a lot of little interesting details on how Cloudflare does it. They are trying to not block. I forget what they call it. They're not blocking when they find misconfigured DNSSEC. Because that's the problem with some DNSSEC is people don't implement it properly. If they don't implement it properly, it'll actually drop the site. Cloudflare's got some interesting methods they're using to keep the site from being blocked and then instead notify whoever is in charge of that site, which is good. They also are using some type of multi-source verification I wasn't clear on, where they take different DNS records and do a comparison of whether or not the site's proper. So they're actually doing some better checking to make sure the validity of the site. I wasn't clear on all the things they're doing, but at least they are doing it, which is really nice.
Yeah.
GNU Cache 3.0 release, and this is interesting. There's a lot of features added. I'm still using the Key My Money, which we talked about the last show, that they have a new release too that's really, really nice. I might take another look at GNU Cache, play around with it. It's been a while. It didn't have quite as many features as the Key My Money program.
You know, speaking of that, I was going to mention that Kraft. Are you familiar with Kraft, Tom?
I am not.
Kraft, it's also a kind of a small enterprise business software suite for invoicing and that type of thing. They are releasing version 0.8. And it's been around for quite a long time. I checked the repositories for KDE Neon, and they're just still at, I think it's 0.53.
Ah.
So if you're going to install it from the repositories, you're not going to get the latest version, and that may be updated, But I think it was a couple of days ago that it was made available. It was something I was going to share, but I just think it's appropriate to mention it since you said that.
And on Genio Cache, the same problem. Mm-hmm. Your 2.6, I think, is still the stable version. So if you're running a Debian-based distro, it's still pulling the 2.6 stable, mm-hmm. Even in Debian 9.
No, it's possible to install the later version. And what do you do? Do you pin it or something?
They have a tool for doing it.
Okay.
They have a what do you call it? They have their own repository. You have the repository, and you can load the 3.0 version. Yeah, PPA.
Okay.
That's what I'm looking
for.
Okay.
I see.
I had misspoke about the Looking Glass. I conflated the Hurricane Electric BGP Looking Glass with DNSviz.net. DNSviz.net allows you to see the DNSSEC authentication chains to troubleshoot problems.
Nice.
That's been super helpful. Sorry
about
that.
That's very cool. No, that's definitely add that to the show notes, as I'd like to look at that. I'm curious about things. I don't think I have DNSSEC set up on my website, but I don't want to break things. That's why I didn't do it. And there's no security transactions. We just have, you know, a good old Let's Encrypt and HTTPS search. So.
And it's VAZ, DNSVAZ, like visualization?
Yes.
Right? Sweet.
Yep. Now, seeing as we're talking about logging, privacy, and VPN, I got a couple things in here. One of them is 100+ VPN logging policy. Someone took the time to kind of organize, I think they're up to 118 VPNs in there, different services, and analyze, someone read their terms and conditions and figured out what their logging policies are, and they listed out the ones that didn't.
That would be an interesting chart or table to review.
And I think I won't want to misquote the name of the VPN, so I won't say it without referencing the show notes. We talked about one of the VPN services that was really inexpensive, and what the terms and conditions essentially did was they sold your data. So they offered a VPN service, and they bragged about the fact that you're hiding from the ISP, but then they literally did the same thing, and they sold your data.
So, well, now, when you say they sold your data, what they really sold was
your browsing history
profile
and everything. Profile and browsing
and
history. Everything they knew about you, they were selling. It was their marketing method, which I thought was...
Wow.
It's like I said, you're only passing the trust along to someone else.
No, I signed up with PIA.
I like them a lot. They're on the highest rated list.
Oh, good.
Especially since TunnelBear got bought by McAfee. Which everyone who watches any tech news stuff eventually runs into Linus Tech Tips, and they know that about 5 times for every video he has to say Tunnel Bear. It's somewhere in some contract he has with them. You can't watch a video without the first 30 seconds and the last minute being about Tunnel Bear and maybe a couple drops in the middle.
Huh.
So everyone's making fun of him when they got it. Like, I see his Twitter blowing up. Like, everyone tagged him. And he did a video. Look, guys, I heard. And they got bought by McAfee, and he actually he's recommending PIA, which I'm happy to hear about, because if you don't know about PIA, they're an interesting company because they actually have contributed greatly back to the open source community. So they're not just like, hey, we have a VPN and we make money. They actually have done – they paid for the second code audit on OpenVPN. So they did the whole what do you call that? It's a code audit, but it's by the security researchers. It's open source, but they paid someone to painstakingly go through it. There's a word for it, code audit and review.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would call it
a paid code audit.
Yeah, that's a paid code audit. So anyways, they hired a security team to do that and then do a full assessment and then make changes to the code and, of course, push it upstream. And I like when companies give back. The problem I have with PIA is, one, they have a stupid logo. Two, private internet access. They are the most generic. Everything they do is the most generically named. I think their Twitter handle is buy VPN. It's everything's the most
Twitter.
Generically named, which only amuses me. But on the other side is they let you pay in any way you want. They'll let you pay with a gift card, Bitcoin,
cowrie shells,
probably. Yeah, but they do everything they do to help make your payment anonymous. Therefore, your entire connection to them, they don't want to know who you are, essentially. So I kind of like them. If you look at how they set it up, they don't really ask a lot of questions. You get assigned. Matter of fact, you don't get a username; you get a PIA number.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they assign it. You mm-hmm. just are handed a PIA number, and then that's your account number from there. And however you want to pay us, that's up to you, and keep it as anonymous as you want. So from a company standpoint, they're really, really good. They're also really good on the logging policy. So they're a popular VPN, support OpenVPN. They support pfSense. They have documents on pfSense on how to do the network. I expanded on them and did the how to split your network, because once you go to a VPN, you'll find problems. They have a document on torrenting. Like, they tell you how to torrent with their service. Find another VPN that even allows it. It has a document on how to do it.
What is your Twitter handle? Buy VPN?
Something like that. It's something really – everything about them is like this weird – you can find it from the PIA website. Type in PIA VPN, go to the website, and you can click on their Twitter. Also, do you have a leaky VPN? There's a site you can check. A guy created a thing. It's WebRTC leaks, back to not having your DNS secured properly. And WebRTC allows to leak something like your local IP address, but they also found ways to get your public IP address from there. So there's a test you can do of which VPNs are leaking, which ones are not. Or you can just go for a full stack VPN and make your life good. Also related to that, something that I learned doing my VPN testing with, I did a full audit of all the data that goes through. I loaded the PIA VPN on a Windows 10 machine because most people run Windows. And Windows 10 does something interesting. So even though the DNS does not leak, PIA does a good job without leaking the DNS. It wraps everything in a tunnel. I didn't realize this. The telemetry that comes out of Windows 10 goes to IPs, not DNS. So when you do that, you still watch telemetry data leak out. It doesn't reveal your IP address because it's only going to Microsoft servers, but they've actually hard-coded in Windows 10. That way, when you monkey with the DNS, they're not using DNS lookups at all.
Can't you? But I remember seeing that, and that was a big complaint as far as information that was being sent back to Microsoft. But can't you, in your router, block those IP addresses?
Yes, you'd have to block. There's a list. Someone's compiled the list of them. They're all over the place because it round robins through all of them. And yeah, you can block all those. So far, what I've been told, I've not verified this. If you block them, it does not break activation. But I think that's a matter of time before Microsoft says, if you're not going to give us telemetry data, we're going to deactivate Windows. Because something Windows has to do, and this does go over the VPN, is it does keep authenticating itself. To make sure it stays online. So once you get a license for Windows 10, you don't permanently have it. It has to keep phoning home. I know because when I play with virtual machines and I fork one of my Windows 10, it breaks all the other ones because they're all built based off the same license. And I don't know where, if this violates a license or not. I do it for testing purposes. I fork Windows 10, I install something, see if I like it, and if I either merge it back to the main or I don't and delete it, and it breaks the registration.
Yeah.
So you said that you're still leaking data through the telemetry. Is it the telemetry itself is sending it out, not the IPs that it's going to?
It's going to IP address.
Isn't that what the VPN is doing? Is it sending all your IP information down the VPN?
Yep.
So even if it's going per IP address, it's still going to go down the VPN out.
It goes around it. That's what I found interesting.
But isn't that the whole purpose of a VPN?
I know.
Because, right, what if I type in my own vendor, but what if I type in my own IP address? It's not going to go down the VPN?
No, what happens is this
is the layer?
It's going around. So PA, when they install Windows 10, it takes over your stack. It uses OpenVPN in the background, but they have a tool they wrote, and it encapsulates all the data from your computer to pipe it through the VPN. But Windows 10 has got some other service running that just goes around it. Because like when PA, when you do the full security version of it, they actually will turn off your internet until you connect. Like, they put in blocks, and it only goes out through a different adapter that it creates, so it locks everything down. Windows 10 doesn't care. So it's not exactly leaking data. It's just telemetry data is going out still. So don't use Windows. That's the moral of our story, like this podcast.
And on the VPN front, there's a tool that I found. It's available on GitHub. It's called Streisand, like Barbara Streisand. The tagline is silence censorship and automate the effect. It's a collection of tools that this team has put together. It says it sets up a new server running your choice of L2TP or IPsec, OpenConnect, OpenSSH, OpenVPN, ShadowSox, SSH, LH, which I've never heard of, S-Tunnel, a Tor bridge, and WireGuard. It will do this in an automated fashion. It uses Ansible under the hood, so you can see exactly how all of this stuff is configured, and then it generates custom instructions for all these services. When it's all done doing its thing, it gives you an HTML file with some simple instructions to connect to your brand new self-setup VPN, and then you can share that with your friends or family or coworkers and stuff. But you have to pay for the server that it's running on. in somewhere like Google or Amazon or Linode or any of those other places. Kind of nifty, though.
You know, it's interesting. I was just talking to one of our listeners, Ken, yesterday about it, and he mentioned Streisand. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's VPNs are being more
singing
and more popular.
Its praises.
Yeah.
My last two little pieces are Under Armour got hacked. Apparently, they were, you know, the company, and I couldn't, if you've seen the show notes, Phil smiling. They were apparently Under Armoured. And
should have used App Armor.
Okay. Yeah, they should use App Armor. If Under Armour only used App Armor, that would have solved the problem. So, reset your passwords if you haven't heard about the Under Armour hacking using some of the tools and things that they had or whatever. I don't even know. I know who they are as a company, but I don't know what security implications it really is. They make clothing stuff, but they probably have IoT clothing or something. I didn't even look. It just
they have an app, a fitness app.
A fitness app?
My fitness pal.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's what it's related to. Got it. I just wanted to make a pun. And then I'll end it with the other puns. So apparently things went awry over at Panera Bread. Yeah, the security team was just loafing around, causing the crummy situation with security. It's going to cost them a lot of dough. They really need to improve.
Do you have proof of that?
Oh. Oh. Hey, no matter which way you slice it, this is a mess. Sorry. So yeah, Phil apparently got to see it in real time and to see it was a big mess because he was there when it was tweeting.
You could see credit card information just sitting there in the plain text by changing the user ID. So I saw a lot of stuff that you're probably not supposed to be able to see from a company that's keeping their data secure. Or not in this case.
Not secure, yeah.
I called up American Express, and the support guy I talked to, he's like, hey, how can I help you? I'm like, oh, you'll want to check Krebs on security. And he responds with, what? And I'm like, yeah, go look up Brian Krebs on Twitter. And then he just goes, oh, no, this is bad. I'm like, yeah, you guys have a good day. Or, well, the best you can now. Good luck.
And apparently, like, through the hack, they once again denied and said they weren't doing it. And didn't they not believe the security researcher?
Yeah, absolutely. You could get this information off of, like, catering.panerabread.com, business.panerabread.com, or something like that. Several different subdomains serving up these endpoints. Oh, it was a bad time. 37 million records with credit card information, home addresses, people's full names, and all of that stuff.
Yeah, wow. Just thanks, Panera. But it's okay. Our government will protect us as soon as they go back to complete pen
for
and paper.
For a dollar, you can have a bakery item.
For those of you that haven't heard about the City of Atlanta attack, someone wrote an article, why are cities are so vulnerable to cyber attack? The mayor
keep clicking on links.
I know. Well, and the mayor's like, we want justice and we want them to go after the people who did this to us. And I agree. I just know how implausible it is. People always say, are you sympathizing? Like, people shouldn't click, or you're defending the people who hacked. I'm like, I'm not defending them. I just realize how implausible it is on catching them. It's just not. Yeah, great. I think they should be punished. Mm-hmm. Let's move on, because you're not going to catch them. You're not going to find them. It's just such an unlikely scenario. They, you know, someone inside clicked. User training is a better method, because stopping the hackers, what, you're going to arrest them. They're going to have another one's going to do it tomorrow. So, yeah, it's a mess. It's a mess. But they were using pen and paper. I don't know what the result is today. I was trying to find an update on it.
I saw that.
They had to switch to it. Like, everything in Atlanta, in the City of Atlanta, is on hold.
That's terrifying.
I really would like a debrief about why they don't have proper backups and why they're not using them. But then again, I'd probably be completely disappointed when someone is holding the email that says, well, I said to do it, and someone said, there's no money to do that thing. And continued on to fund some other dumb city project.
Well, you know, or the other thing is, it depends on how big the backups are. You know, I mean, at the hospital I work at, it takes 3 weeks to completely restore some of the data we have, you know, because it takes so long to copy data. I mean, when you have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of terabytes of images, then you know, it takes time. And our, like, we have a disaster recovery system. Is the data center is in Troy, or is in Texas, and if our main data center goes down, they put it on a semi truck and drive it to us, because it's faster to do that than try to copy it over, you know, from one data center to another.
Mm-hmm. Wow, even that's over a lot of data.
10 gig internet pipes.
That is a scale that I have not gotten to experience yet. That takes some crazy amount of engineering.
Well, yeah.
And related to directly to this is we're working with a company now. Well, they just engaged with us the other day to talk about this. They have the same thing. They actually wrote an open source imaging system for medical scanning, and it's getting extremely popular. I can't disclose all the details yet, but the short of it is one of the things they're looking at is building it on top of some FreeNAS stuff because of the ability to create snapshots hourly. So if anything got corrupted, you could just roll back to a previous mm-hmm. snapshot very quickly. I've talked to the engineers directly. TrueNAS is doing really well, like the FreeNAS company. Because of the ransomware problem, no one's really found any good ways to mitigate the problem, but they know ZFS, if you create these hourly snapshots, differentially, you can create tons of snapshots because they take up almost no space because there's not that much data at once. But if there's a crypto thing, it suddenly creates a lot of data at once, so they can hurry up and just roll backwards to that snapshot and stop it. More companies are using heuristics, too, to see if there's when mass data changes happen, they just shut everything off. They're like, I don't know why, but someone's massively changing something, and they turn everything to read-only at that point. I talked to the people at CloudBerry. They're doing some new heuristic stuff, even in their backups. If they see mass changes, they pause and alert you going, for some reason, a lot of your data changed, and you should figure out why.
Yeah.
So the heuristic approach is helping. The ZFS snapshot's helping. So just... yeah, it's a mess.
You know, and speaking of that type of thing, the city of Detroit, you know, their water payment site, when I try to set up recurring payments so that it would just automatically be paid, one of the things they required was your Social Security number.
What?
Why?
I have no idea, but I'm going to go to a meeting. I've got to find out when they've got their public meetings or when, you know, members of the community can go. Huh?
It's because it's Detroit. That's my
answer. Well, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not giving you my Social Security number just to set up recurring payments. So each month I have to go in there and pay as a guest. And of course, I give them my credit card number, and I'm kind of curious, if you pay guest, what happens to that credit card number? Is it then just deleted once the payment's made and approved and all that?
Probably becomes the primary key in the database.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, anyway, right. I wanted to mention that. It was just, you know, crazy.
Mm. Crazy stuff. That's what I got for the news. Okay. I think that's all my notes.
All right. Well, I'm happy to say that you did not take
what?
All of mine.
What? No. I can try harder next time.
Yeah, well, this one, I can try harder next time, yeah. This one kind of caught my eye. You know, Oracle, of course, is very litigious, I guess. They sue a lot, and, you know, they kind of have some people in the open source community don't like them, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, apparently one of their customers was being very sneaky, and the customer actually was called, I think, Terex. And so what they do is they have a bunch of clients for whom they provide software maintenance, and they, you know, patch and do all sorts of kinds of things for these customers. So what they were trying to do is they were trying to get around the payment of the maintenance fees and those kinds of things that you got to pay to Oracle for their software if you're going to be distributing it, et cetera. And so they set up some shell companies, and each company had one server, so they didn't pay the multiple server fee. And Oracle found out about it because somebody from that company, instead of using, they logged in with one of the shell company accounts, like it's a completely different company, but they did it from the IP address of the Terex, the main company. And so once Oracle found out about it, they contact the FBI, there's an investigation, and then they find out that this company has been doing this for years. So as a result of this, the CEO and two other executives are going to prison.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's huge. Yes, and yeah. They said that these are the first executives ever to be sentenced to prison as a result of intellectual property litigation with Oracle. So
finally.
You know, so so cheating, that kind of cheating is, well, no kind of cheating is good, but just have, holding somebody accountable at the top, it's just good to see that, that that's happening.
Usually all the blame gets shifted off onto the lowliest engineer.
Sure.
And then the company washes their hands of it. So this is huge and awesome in my book.
Yeah, so anyway, so yeah, they pled guilty and... So that was a piece of news. I thought, oh, that seems kind of interesting. Another one that caught my eye. I read there's a kind of a blog news site for Washington D.C. information called TheHill.com, and on The Hill they had an article. The one word in it that really caught my eye, and it wasn't Trump. It was Linux, and it had to do with lawmakers press Linux. Like, I'm thinking to myself, well, Linux is a kernel, so how are they doing that? They might have thought it was maybe somebody from the military, but anyway, press Linux on security of open source software. And this was really as a result of the recent, I think it was Heartbleed and some of those other. Well, that was a couple of years ago, but just that and then Spectre,
the big named. Vulnerabilities.
Yes, exactly. That's the word I was thinking of, vulnerability.
Marketing websites and logos and all of that.
Right.
Yes. You know, and of course, as part of this, and they reached out to the Linux Foundation with this, and Jim Zemlin, I think it is?
Yep.
Yep, to him. And one of the comments they put in their letter to him is, as companies like Microsoft, Adobe, and Apple have the processes and procedures in place to quickly address these vulnerabilities, and more importantly, I started laughing when I saw that. This has not always been the case for OSS vulnerabilities, as OSS creators or maintainers may be globally located volunteers who can often, or, and they're telling Jim Zemlin this, as if he doesn't know, who often have unrelated full-time employment and may be uncompensated for their OSS work. So I thought it was kind of interesting that well, there was some comedic aspects just from the way they, you know, just Congress and tech. I just don't see those two words coming together very smoothly. But the fact that they're acknowledging the fact that it is a significant part of the underpinning of the internet and just other technology projects, that we have to be looking at that and how to more quickly mitigate risks and threats as they, you know, as they're made known. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And Tom, I'll get that show note to you. And then there was another one, I think it was the last one I said that I saw. And I was trying to figure out, you know, and I was going to categorize this as what have you been doing for the last couple of years, department? This Valve says it's committed to make Linux and SteamOS a great place for gaming. This was out of Softpedia News, because apparently something was delisted from the Steam store navigation after a routine cleanup. So they went and they did some cleanup at the Steam store, and then there was the Steam machines section was delisted, and apparently that impacted the Linux gamers.
Right. Yeah, I heard somebody talking about that. They thought that that Steam was no longer going to sell the Steam boxes because it wasn't on their website anymore.
Yes, and as it turned out, this was from April 4th. They said that it was no, they still have Linux love. It's
all
just
right.
That due to a routine cleanup, somebody had inadvertently.
Yeah, they actually hired a guy who's got a really strong in the open source community. His name eludes me, but we actually mentioned it a couple shows ago, I think. He's a known open source contributor, so they're kind of excited. Especially, I think he does work related to graphics, and graphics drivers. So we're hoping to get even more support.
I remember that the name. I forget too.
I'm bad with names. I can't even pronounce them right.
It's this memory thing.
Yeah.
All right. So that's my little news tidbits.
Speaking of games, over the weekend I actually found a game called Flare RPG. From their website, Flare is an open source, FLARE, RPG.org. So Flare is an open source 2D action RPG licensed under the GPL3. Its gameplay is similar to Diablo. It reminds me a lot of Diablo 2. You use WASD to move around, and you can fight and kill things. The campaign is called the Empyrean campaign. The story begins with the player being exiled to their homeland of Empyrean, and then you embark on a quest to regain entry. The journey will take you through many regions and plenty of side quests along the way. It's the style of game is called Fantasy Core, and it's dark fantasy, and there's blood and violence and killing, and it's pretty fun.
Quick question. I noticed that there's the engine download and the game download. You got to download each of them, or can you just download the game?
There is an all-in-one that you can download.
Okay, that's what I was hoping for.
And then I was able to play it on Ubuntu, and that was really nice.
Mm. Yay! And can I ask why they chose SourceForge to host?
I don't know.
All right. I always get nervous when I see things hosted on there.
Haven't they kind of cleaned up their act?
That's what I've heard. I think we've talked about that.
Yeah.
I think we have. So maybe, you know.
The latent.
But I understand where you're coming from, Tim. Tim. Hey, Tim. And we've got the Tom bits from Tom Hortons.
Yes.
Sorry, Tom. I don't know. I was thinking donuts. Anyway,
it's okay. We're all programmers. All by one errors.
Anyway, all right. That's enough.
What kind of machine does it need to run, and will it run on my laptop?
It will. You could probably run this on a Raspberry Pi. It doesn't.
Okay.
Well, no. Yeah. It downloaded an x86 executable, so not a Pi. But not very many. I mean, it looks like Diablo 2.
Got it.
So the engine can't be that monstrous. What? I mean, it's no Crysis.
I see the Engine Plus game, and then the game is bigger. Why is the Engine Plus game smaller than the... Okay, I'm done asking questions. Either way, I'm going to test this out, because it looks like it's something to be fun to play.
And then in news-related things, from the WebPKI world, Cloudflare has released their certificate transparency dashboard. It's called Merkletown, as in a Merkle tree. It's a data storage.
Oh.
Highly efficient. You can access this at https://ct.cloudflare.com. You can see certificate issuance logs of anybody who's sending to CT currently. These would be certificate authorities. And I noticed that Let's Encrypt was something like 70% of all of the issuance being logged on and displayed on Merkletown, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yay. Mm.
And then also in the WebPKI world, Let's Encrypt has released SCT embedding. So what's an SCT? It's a signed certificate timestamp. It's a signed assertion by CT log operators, such as Google or Cloudflare, that a certificate authority has submitted a pre-certificate to the log, which means that an actual certificate will soon be incorporated as proof of issuance. There's a deep technical dive that one of the Boulder engineers has done. You can find that on letsencrypt.org. It's pretty interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to play with this DNS viz, too. That's neat.
All right, who's... we're looking down at... We're looking at you, Tony.
I did find one thing. There are some hackers. You know how they say you can run Doom, run Doom on anything?
Yes.
Well, somebody got it running on an ATM machine.
Yes.
And then you use the keypad as the four-way, and you can play Doom right on that.
So instead of taking out $50, you were playing Doom.
One of those don't ask why, but it happened. So our friends over at Podcast Detroit, they have an ATM machine in there that they acquired and have the keys to. So this would be great if they could put Doom on it. They've been looking what to do with it. It's in the lobby. They're like, I'm like, why is this here? And he goes, you don't ask questions like that.
What to Doom with it?
Yes. Oh, yes. I will send it to Dave, because Dave will definitely want to put Doom on it. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
That's good.
And that's all I've had time to to get. So.
Mm-hmm. I will throw this out there because they've been actively doing more updates and things like that. But Signal, the messaging platform that well, a lot of us enjoy, a lot of us like it, they've been adding more features, and Skype is licensing it, going to license the technology behind it. So some people were confused
Signal.
And they thought
– Signal open source?
Signal is open source.
So is which part of the Microsoft strategy is that? Is that to embrace or
Well, it's because they're getting in trouble after the sensor thing.
Kidding,
so I think they're
I'm
trying
kidding.
To come up with a way to let you encrypt your messages. So mm-hmm. they're going to do it as an add-on to Skype to allow – Skype is still the transport method. I thought it was weird. Mm-hmm. But they're going to use some of that on there because if you didn't know, Skype got caught censoring stuff. And it became a big debate of how much of our conversation are you watching? And I'm like, we addressed this a few years ago since Microsoft bought them, all of your conversations. Mm-hmm. Skype is once Microsoft bought them, it was downhill quick.
Bought them and moved it from a peer-to-peer to everything goes central through the servers.
Yeah. And they also someone created some special private links and sent them over Skype, and they were probed by a IP address in Redmond. And Microsoft first denied, then admitted, well, we scan all the links. You're like, you didn't just scan the links. You opened the web pages because we created private, undocumented web pages. And the only place we did was Skype as a honeypot to see what you guys would do with it.
Yeah.
Ha ha, caught you.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they watched it go through and probe the web page. So they're like, your system did it. It was a bot, not like a human, but either way, you're probing and clicking. You're actually following the link. You didn't just look at the link. You actually followed the link. So don't use Skype. Use Signal. Signal's wonderful. I didn't know they had a desktop app. I only learned that recently.
It's basically just Chromium.
Oh, I didn't realize.
When I open up Signal, it tries to open up Chromium first, and then I can close out Chromium, and then Signal's still there running.
Oh, they have you can add it as a repository and actually get it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that ran on Chromium too. Cool. Or not cool. I don't know. I use it on my phone. So.
Yeah. Primarily.
Yeah.
But the recipient has to be on Signal also?
Yes.
No.
No. Well, to get started with no, they don't. I can message you from Signal and to join Signal. If you care about the encryption, yeah.
When you say message, then that's a typical text message?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
You say, hey, I'm going to create a...
So
okay.
the Android app will send either Signal messages or your regular SMS messages.
Yeah. They can take over as your SMS as well.
Yeah, and that's what I did. I set my main SMS as my Signal app. Mm-hmm. And it will transparently either send a Signal app or a text message, whether it knows like who the end person is.
Yes.
So anytime I text, Tom, it always goes across Signal or my cousin. But if I text you, Mary, or somebody else, or if I text my wife, it goes regular SMS.
And the call quality, if you haven't used it, because it uses internet to transport, uses your data plan, the call quality is excellent. You can do secure calls with it, and you can do secure face-to-face calls because it'll use the camera on your phone. I haven't tried the group messaging.
It works.
Okay.
I've got a couple friends in a Signal group.
I don't have enough. All my Signal friends are at this table.
I really like it. I really like it because you can send memes and GIFs and stuff right through it. They make it so easy.
Yes.
You know what I have an issue with is creating group messages, like text messages with a group. If I create it on my phone and I send it out to everybody, then they all reply and my Signal sees it as a different group message.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like and they all reply to the same group message, but it's not the one I created. It's another one. I don't know. It's weird. But yeah.
All right. Well, anything else?
I think that's about it.
That's the end of it. That's all that happened.
Yeah.
Well, so it's down to the bottom of the glass of the beer.
Down to the bottom of the glass of the beer.
What kind of beer?
All
IPA?
Of it? Oh yeah, sure.
All right.
No IPAs.
No IPAs.
I cannot drink IPAs.
Oh, I forgot to mention. I will mention this.
Yes.
So, in this is all, a lot of people interested in this, and me included. So the people over at Citrix who were supporting Zen Server, oh, are still running Zen Server, they giveth, but then they tooketh away. And so when they moved to the new version, they took away and cut down all the features. So the folks over formed a new foundation company group, whatever you call it, xcp.ng. It's a complete open source version of Zen Server, top to bottom. Now, there is a business interest in this. They are the people who run Zen Orchestra. And they realized Citrix's move could probably be detrimental to the product that their product runs on top of. So they forked it, and now you can get it. I downloaded it. I replaced one of our Zen servers with it so I can help beta test and give them feedback. I have no feedback to give them other than it's awesome because nothing's broke. It's been running for a week, and we've had VMs and everything on it. It's great. So the only thing that does break is you can't use the Citrix Zen Manager Windows software. Too bad. But I don't use it anyways. But Zen Orchestra runs perfectly fine on it. They even wrote a really cool little curl command to it. But yeah, that's ready for download and fully open source.
Great.
I like their logo. It's pretty neat. It's a rocket ship blasting off.
Yes. Yes. And they're really on top of it. They got crowdfunded. Went above and beyond the goal for the crowdfunding campaign. So
good. Which, it's always nice when that happens.
And they actually met the release date. They said when they're going to release it, and then they released it on that day.
Oh, and my God. Worked. I love that kind of stuff.
I know. They're weird. So
they're not using Fedora, are they?
No. Well, it does. Well, it's CentOS in the background, I think.
Yeah.
Because isn't Zen supported by Fedora, or is a relationship with them?
I don't know. Okay. I know that when the last time that I was a Zen administrator, it had DOM 0 had just been based on Cent 7 at that time. But this was a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's still Cent. I don't know what version they're basing on, but I just know because I had to type yum for the updates. And they're actually doing something different than Citrix. So they're actually allowing all the patching through the yum system versus Citrix has their own patch management and they lock everything out.
Yeah, it was you used to have to go enable the base repositories to install Vim.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, are you sure you want to do this? Yes, please.
Yes. So that's in their next update. Their first update was to make it functional, and it still works in a similar way to the way Citrix did it. But they right away said this is their proof of concept. The next one that's going to be released is going to be incremental. They're going to keep up with the Citrix numbers. So Citrix at 7.4, they're at 7.4. Then they're going to have sub numbers for their updates. So you'll, by the way, you can transfer the VMs transparently.
Oh, very cool.
So they work fine. I exported VMs out of Citrix and brought them right into XCP.
Nice.
Good.
So the migration path is smooth.
That's always nice to hear.
Yes. All right. Do we have music?
Wait. We have Linux convention scene.
Okay. Sorry. That's ahead of us.
It's April. Actually, it's our first podcast in April. So I do have some Linux conventions or open source software conventions. Well, the first one is Linux Fest Northwest. The 2018 edition of Linux Fest Northwest is scheduled to occur on Saturday, April 28th and April 29th. That's out in Bellingham, Washington. It's a pretty large Linux Fest. And I think this is almost their 20th year. I believe next year will be their 20th anniversary. Wow. So they're going strong out in Bellingham. Also, there is for anyone who's interested in ZFS, there's a ZFS user conference. This is going to be, I believe, on Thursday and Friday. Let me pull this up really quick here just to confirm it. Yeah, April 19th and 20th, which I think is isn't that Thursday? Thursday and Friday? Thursday and Friday. I knew it. I was just testing myself. But anyway, so that is going to be out, I believe, in Norwalk, Connecticut. So, and for a small fee of about $100, you can go out there for a day and a half of lectures, networking, other types of sessions on the ZFS file system.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So, thought that was kind of cool.
We really got to get Michael Lucas to talk about ZFS sometime. We got to get him.
Yeah, we should. And, you know, he gave us a book. He just released a book on
SSH. SSH Master, yeah. You let me borrow that the other weekend. And
yeah, but
I've been poking through it.
Cool.
He's got some good humor. Yes. I like his writing style.
His right, yeah. That's, I think, you know, when you're reading, I'll say dry subject matter because sometimes technology is kind of dry. I just say that. Maybe you guys don't see that, but I do.
We're enthusiastic about technology.
Oh, I'm enthusiastic about it, but sometimes when you're – but the topic itself,
yeah.
You know, when you see a book, it
yes.
can be very dry. But what Michael Lucas does and does very effectively is he injects some humor into it. So you just keep on reading because he helps you, I think, you know, remember what you read and just makes yeah. it more palatable.
I've enjoyed all my conversations I've had with him in person and at talks. So,
yeah, so good. I'm glad that maybe one of our future podcasts we could talk a little bit more in detail mm-hmm. about it.
And he's a local guy.
Yeah, so that's very good. And did I say the last convention I have is at the end of the month also? And that happens to be one that's near and dear to our hearts. I'm not even going to look at you, Tony,
end
when I talk
month?
About it, because PenguinCon.
It's technically the first weekend of May.
Oh. Okay.
But PenguinCon is
Never
the
mind.
Best. It is the best conference ever.
Yes.
Yep. And
it's Comic-Con and, well, not really. I always thought of it as Comic-Con
science
and
fiction.
Linux together,
it's
but it's
just
not.
Sci-fi.
It's
sci-fi. Sci-fi and Linux.
Sci-fi and Linux.
Yeah, and science.
And science, yeah.
Because there's, we had a few scientists there. We had that person who was literally a brain surgeon from U of M, and they did a talk, so.
Really?
Yeah, I went to it. It was wonderful.
Oh, wow.
They did the. You ever seen where they do the implants and can use your brain stimulation to operate?
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah. They. She's the researcher on the cutting edge of that, and it was a great talk.
Wow,
that's cool.
So that's just straight up science. It's stuff that you would have thought of science fiction. Turns out she's making it happen.
And speaking of that, I believe last year didn't we have the maintainer of Scientific Linux on a panel?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Speaking last year.
Yes.
That was an awesome presentation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So.
There's
so
lots
anyway,
of goodness.
Yeah, so that's PenguinCon, and that's, as Tony aptly noted, that's coming up, I think, the first weekend of May.
And this podcast will be there.
Yes, we will be there.
Yeah.
Three-quarters of us will be there.
Three-quarters of us.
So,
sorry, Tony.
Yeah, sorry, Tony.
I know. I wish I could be there.
Yeah, we wish you could, too.
I've got a...
So, well, two of the three of us does. Phil's just over there laughing. But anyway, I just wanted to... I just wanted to share those Linux and open source conventions. I think there's also a Drupal one. I won't necessarily throw that into it, but there's a Drupal convention.
Yeah.
It's coming up. You were a Drupal guy.
Yeah. I've done Drupal. Like, I tried setting up Drupal.
I'm sorry.
It's so powerful that I didn't have time to set it up.
So it's like a typical guy, you didn't ask for directions? No.
And no, actually, I took a full day class.
So not only did you ask for directions, but you got the book, so to speak.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it reminds me of Blender, not because it's a graphics mm-hmm. thing, but it's
exactly.
just that complexity yeah. where you know it's extremely powerful, but my goodness, you need a degree to get through it all.
Right.
I didn't put it in there, but you're aware of the, they called it Drupal Gidden 2. It's CVE 2018-7600. Basically, it's been vulnerable for years to a major flaw. So,
oh, yeah. Maybe they'll be talking about
that. Yeah, so if you're running a Drupal instance, update, like now.
And if you ever did run one, call that customer you set it up for.
I think
it never
updated
since
White House website
was
Drupal-based.
Mm-hmm. WhiteHouse.gov.
WhiteHouse.gov.
Not .com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that might also be running
it
but that's not the one you're talking
about. But it's not
about.
The one you want
no,
to go
no,
to.
No, that's not the one I'm talking
or it
about.
Is. I don't know.
It is not. I went there by mistake once.
Not safe for work.
Yeah.
Both
right.
of them now. I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, I went there by mistake once. Any other time after that, it wasn't a mistake. No, just kidding. Yeah, it was kind of not my... yeah, that was kind of weird. But anyway, so those are the Linux... we're going back on track. That was the Linux convention scene for April with a little sneak peek into May.
All right.
Music?
Music. So?
Open?
OpenBSD.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? I'm looking at their page right now.
They don't have a song.
They don't. And so we're on 6.3 right now. That's just
so.
Released. There's
yeah.
no 6.3. There's no 6.2. There's 6.1 is the last song that they have. But... I went back to 6.0.
Mm-hmm. Because we probably skipped that one. Or did we?
I don't. There's a few of the releases that they did multiple songs on.
Oh, okay.
So this is one that we did not do. And actually, I just forgot the. I have the song queued up, and it took me away from the webpage, and I forgot what it's called. Hold on, let me get back
to
the webpage.
Well, they're so clever with their music. I'm sure it's something quite, quite well done.
Is that it? I don't think that was it.
All right.
Oh yeah. Okay. It's Comfortably Dumb.
That's a wonderful song.
I like it.
Yeah. All right. Let me unmute. Wait a minute.
That's not the right song.
There's something else playing on my phone. Oh, it's the Under Armour app's webpage. There we go. Okay.
So Tony was playing an ad as our outro music.
Right. All right, here we go.
I don't know how, but I need this feature now. My users are all pained. I need my server up again. Relax, then let me take the message first. Just the basic facts. Stop whining between your words. There is no Wi-Fi, you are bleeding. New vendor firmware not on horizon. Packets only coming through in waves. Your lips move a broken audio music. What you sing for bomb child, crappy Sinkota. But Pierre Proulx said machines fall down, go boom. Now we've got that feeling once again. We can't explain, you would not understand. This is just how you are, original poster. You have become comfortably dumb. For bomb child, I can no longer handle it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And, Phil was enjoying it. It's some good lyrics in there. Yeah. And that will be in the full version will be in the edited show. And then links to it in our show notes. But
thank
you. I just Google BSD song, open BSD song, mm-hmm. and it brings up the page with all their songs and stuff.
Oh, okay. That's good. It's all in like one spot.
It is.
Excellent.
All right, so I guess we've come to the end. You have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 272.
Free as in beer.
Yeah, this is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
Phil Parada.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show at smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.